This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 123 of Within the Trenches. And this is a podcast based on the experience of being a 911 dispatcher. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/trenches. One of the books that I'm currently listening to right now is, and I mentioned this before, but I'm mentioning it again. I listen to it as much as I can, but it's mostly when I'm traveling, and I will be traveling actually in the next week or so. So I'll be listening to even more, but the book that I'm currently listening to is 11/22/63. And it is, it's a book by Stephen King. It revolves around the JFK assassination. Excellent choice. However, if you are looking into some other type of book, you can also choose from over 180,000 titles for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. So remember, if you want your free audio book today, go to audibletrial.com/trenches. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trenches for your free audiobook and 30-day free trial. Also, as always, this episode, along with all the other episodes for the podcast, are sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Now, the last episode 122, I was joined by Jennifer and Rob. It was a good time. We had a very good conversation. I gave a bunch of updates on things that were going on. One of the main ones was the Within the Trenches Continuing Education Scholarship that I ended up putting out the application for everyone to go ahead and start signing up on December 2nd. In the next episode 124, there's going to be an actual video that goes along with this so that you can see exactly where to go. And, you know, while I'm talking for the audio version, I'll be able to tell you as well on there. It's very easy to do. But I have found that, you know, visuals work a lot. And so I wanted to do a video for that. So there'll be more information coming up on that. What I want to talk about today is the hashtag IM911 movement. Now, this has been, it's been going on for a while. However, you know, there are four personal stories that I shared of my own. And I kind of wanted to talk about those because there were some, I saw that there were comments that were on the podcast page on Facebook where people were just kind of wondering a little bit more backstory. Now, originally when I started this movement, this was only, you know, just these short snippets, you know, just these little teasers, a little glimpse into the world of dispatching, 911 dispatch, as well as that dispatcher who took that call, or even the callers that were, you know, sending their IM911 story in, but telling it from their side. So, you know, it's just a short conversation, you know, as dispatch reaching out to that caller, someone who they will most likely never meet. They're reaching out to them in this short little story, you know, by saying, "I was the one who did this. I did, you know, I heard your last breath," or, you know, "This is what happened." You know, you're reaching out to that person and saying, "I was the one who was there for you. And, you know, I was there with you through that whole time. I felt the same thing that you did. I was going through that with you." So there's definitely an emotional attachment there with these stories. And then for the callers to be able to do their version of the story, you know, they're talking back to the dispatcher by telling that person, "You were the one who helped me on my worst day, my horrible nightmare, when it came true." And so there's a lot of powerful things going on with these stories. So I wanted to, again, share some information from my stories. And when I started this out, you know, again, for those who are listening and don't really know about the IM 911 movement, this all started out from the push for reclassification. So the OMB, they have this, you know, they've got this classification, these categories for different jobs. And for emergency dispatchers, they have them in the same category as clerical workers or even commercial dispatchers, which cover like, you know, trucking companies, taxi companies and such. So APCO International originally ended up starting this push, this fight for reclassification. And they had submitted a proposal, which the proposal was then denied, but they were given some time to be able to, you know, send in like a public comment and get all this hard data, this information to submit to the OMB, which is Office of Management and Budget, to, you know, try to sway them or, you know, just kind of turn around their whole thinking and change their mind on their decision to not reclassify dispatchers from clerical to protective, which is the same as, you know, for police, fire, EMS and such. I think even lifeguards are in there as well as a protective class. So, you know, dispatchers wanted the same thing. Again, it was rejected. So there was this fight to start pushing for the reclassification. And one of the things that I saw that APCO was asking for was stories. You know, that they wanted stories from dispatchers or directors or whichever. They wanted stories to show the difference between emergency dispatchers as well as, you know, from, you know, the difference between emergency dispatchers and clerical workers. So that was the part that really interested me. That was what I wanted to do. I wanted, since I've been telling dispatch stories for about 3 years or so now, maybe more like 4 years, it was something that that I really wanted to do. So I got involved. I kind of inserted myself in this whole fight by starting my own movement. And this was to assist both APCO and NENA in their push to get, you know, this reclassification issue resolved. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to do something that was a little more in your face. I wanted to be blunt. I wanted to share snippets of some of my worst calls to show that difference between, you know, the clerical workers and emergency dispatchers, to show, you know, there is a huge difference here. We are doing, you know, big things. We are making decisions every day for the people that are calling in. Excuse me. So I started out with the first one, and this, it was a meme. It was a, you know, a picture of a full moon. It's at night. And the little snippet of my story there was, I heard your last breath the night you flipped your four-wheeler. And then on the bottom, it said hashtag I am 911. And that is how the I am 911 movement was born. I submitted, I posted this on the podcast fan page on Facebook, and I explained what I was doing and that I was going to put more stories up and that I wanted other people to tell their stories as well, that we were going to show the world basically that this is what we do every day. We take calls like this. We are different. We deserve to be in that protective class. There are so many different things that go on. I mean, you know, PTSD is something that's huge. It's not just in military personnel. It's in public safety as well. And is, you know, in many other professions, but, you know, some people would say, you know, you answer the phone and you talk to people, and why are you going to be, you know, suffering from PTSD? Well, if you've read the 800 plus stories, and spoken to people that I've spoken to since the beginning of this movement, you know, or you would know, that PTSD is definitely real in the public safety community, especially in dispatch, because of the amount of calls that we take, the stress that we have to endure, and the calls, just listening to people and being, there's only so much you can do on the phone. So there's a lot of things going on here, and this movement ended up evolving, you know, from just being the reclassification issue, which is a very important thing. Don't get me wrong. Don't get my words twisted. I think that's very important for that reclassification of dispatchers to go through. However, the movement turned into something much bigger by, you know, showing, opening the eyes of people everywhere. I mean, this ended up even pushing off into other areas where, you know, Canada was posting, the UK was posting, they were using hashtag IM999. Australia was posting with their IM000, and then in New Zealand, IM111. This spread everywhere, and people were sharing their stories. If you search hashtag IM911 on Facebook or Twitter, even on Instagram, you will find memes and stories of all kinds, stuff that you can't even imagine, but it's stuff that we deal with. It's stuff that I dealt with when I was a dispatcher just over 13 years, many, many, many calls. And there are four of them that I want to talk to you about today, just to explain a little more. So again, the first one that I put out there, and actually before I get to that, when I was talking about it spreading everywhere, and here are some numbers. And for Twitter, when this first hit, I mean, over the weekend, it was so high up there that it ended up hitting number three on Twitter for trending. You know, for trending hashtags, it was number three. Crazy. Very, I mean, that's a lot for it to get up there. And then on Facebook, it's about 40 plus million engagements that happened. And it's still building from there because it doesn't stop. We have stories that we are posting now still from August 31st. I started this August 24th. We're on stories from August 31st. And today's date is December 9th. So if that tells you how many stories that are still in there, we are posting them daily. Some of the stories that are a lot longer, we're posting them as notes on the Facebook fan page for the podcast, but they're all getting posted up there, and we will continue to post stories. As long as you are sending them in, we will continue to post them because it turned into a way for dispatchers to release. They had so many stories that were held back that they were finally able to put these stories out there, and it started raising awareness on what dispatchers do. And it's amazing the push that has come from it. Industry partners pushing as well, the public pushing, and you know, the entire Thin Gold Line continuing to stay strong and unified, everyone together as one, sharing stories and learning from each other. I spoke to a couple people who had said that they had never really talked about work at work, mostly because, you know, nobody ever wants to look weak. You don't ever want to ask for help. And once this started and people were reading other stories, it generated conversation within their dispatch center. And then everybody started talking, which is amazing. And it's funny, you think about it, when you're in dispatch, and for the public listening, when we're in dispatch, we're talking every day, all the time. We're talking to somebody about something. We're amazing at communications. However, when it comes to communicating with each other, we suck. And when I mean communicating with each other, I don't mean while we're working and taking a call and trying to communicate with each other. That's not what I mean. When stuff like that happens, we work like a well-oiled machine. It just happens, it works, and we kick ass and take names. But when it's done, when a call is over and we get a chance to speak to each other, nothing comes up. Sure, we talk about family, food, you know, funny stuff or whichever, but it's not the stuff that bothers us because you don't want to look weak. But when all of this happened, and still continuing on today, I talk like it's finished, but the movement is not done. It's continued to stay strong and it's still going. People are sharing their stories with each other. People are talking. People are beginning to heal and get that closure that we, you know, we don't always get. So as I said, the first meme that I put out there was, I heard your last breath and you flipped your four-wheeler. Hashtag IM911. So it was night shift and I was on main phones. And just to give you a little visual or something to think about, you know, what my dispatch center looked like walking in, this was in Allegan, Allegan County Central Dispatch in Michigan. You walk in to the PSAP, And there are actually 5 consoles. So as soon as you walk in, you walk to the main phone area. There are 2 consoles that are main phones. And then, well, let's start at the top. So let's think about it as a clock. You're on number 12. That is the, actually the first would be considered the first console. So that's what usually where the supervisor would sit. And then going clockwise around, you've got your 2 phone positions. And then on the other side, you've got your main radios and then your lean console, which lean would be where, you know, you run your warrants and license plates and all the other stuff. But it's also considered a backup for phones and radios. So that position actually was the most fun, going to sit there at that one, because at any given time you could be running plates and then a chase would happen and you would be considered backup radio. So that main channel would switch to a secondary channel or Altac, and you would have all of that main traffic. Now, while that is going on, if it's busy enough in there, you're also backup phones. So it would go to hell sometimes, but that position was probably, at least for me, that was the best one to sit at. Excuse me. So I'm at main phones and I get this phone call, and it's their parents that had called in, and they were hysterical. You know, they were freaking out. I was trying to calm them down. I was trying to figure out exactly what was going on. And they had said that their teenage son had just flipped his four-wheeler, and the four-wheeler was on top of him, and they ended up pushing it off of him to get to him to see if he was okay. And he was barely breathing. Now, I had them kneel next to him. And of course, you know, I get all the information that I'm supposed to get. And we got officers and EMS heading out there to that area. And there was an officer that was just down the road, luckily, from where they were at. I say luckily, but I mean luckily just to, you know, get there fast enough, because there are times when, you know, you've got a high priority going on and there's no officers close, and it just starts eating at you because there's only so much you can do on the phone. And to tell them that it's going to be okay, the officer is almost there, or the EMS is almost there, you just, you know, do what you can to try to keep them calm. So I'm trying to keep them calm, and we start doing CPR. And I remember it was just horrible. I mean, you've got the parents there, one doing compressions and the other giving the breaths, and they're crying and just saying, "You're going to be okay. You're going to be okay." And then you hear one of them say, I feel his ribs. They had crushed. So, they're trying to help him out. And around the time that they had said that, the officer, I heard him over the radio saying that he was on scene, but when he was on the radio, you could hear that he was running to go and find them. And as he's running over there, you know, I hear that the parents are still crying and stuff, and they're yelling at the officer. We're over here. And the officer gets there and starts, he takes over and starts doing CPR. And he keeps saying over and over, "Come on, buddy. Come on, buddy. You can do this. Come on, buddy. Stay with us. Stay with us. Come on, buddy." And I couldn't hang up the phone. It wasn't extremely busy that night, so there was enough people to help on phones. So I didn't have to break from that call at the moment. But for whatever reason, I could not hang up the phone. I wanted to listen. I needed that closure, I guess is what it was. I needed to know if he was going to be okay. But I heard that last, like, agonal, you know, there was the agonal breathing, and then just heard the last breath, and that was it. And I remember hanging my head, and officer calling over the radio, and asking where EMS was at, and EMS was just pulling up, and I hung up the phone and I just sat there. Now, I didn't cry or anything, but I had my head down because I knew he was gone. And it was bad. I still remember that. What's funny though is that I call my son Buddy all the time, and sometimes I'll think back at that call, at the officer telling him, "Come on, buddy, come on, buddy." And another thing, something that triggered this call, and I believe this was the day before I had posted this meme for the I Am 911 movement. I was watching a show called Stranger Things, and it's on Netflix. It's an excellent show. If you get a chance, watch it. And this is kind of a spoiler alert, but not really. There is an episode where there's a mom who finds her son and he's not breathing. And there's a sheriff who is with her, or ends up coming, you know, finding them there, and starts helping with CPR. And in that scene, he's saying, "Come on, buddy." And it got complete and utter trigger to see that. It was one thing to flash back and remember the dialogue of my phone call, but to actually see it play out on a show made it even more real and worse. I mean, I continued watching it, of course, but I sat there while watching it, and I remember I had my daughter in my arms because she was passed out and everybody else was asleep, but I was staying up as long as I could with my daughter so that my wife could get some sleep. And so she's asleep in my arms, and I'm watching this and hearing him say, "Come on, buddy, come on, buddy." And they show a close up of the kid's face, and he's blue, and he's doing CPR, and I had to bite my lip. It took everything inside of me to not break down, because my eyes were shrink wrapped in tears already, and they were starting to fall, and I was holding back as hard as I could. But that was a trigger for me. It just to see that and to hear it, the fact that he was saying, "Come on, buddy," and it was CPR and all this other stuff that was going on. It was crazy. It brought that story back. And I remember holding my daughter a little tighter while I was watching it. And yeah, it was crazy. But the next day, if I remember correctly, the next day was when I started the I Am 911 movement. And that was the first meme that I put out there, that first story, where a teenager, I heard his last breath the night he flipped his four-wheeler. And yeah, goes from there. I got goosebumps talking about it right now. But the next story, is one that I saw many, many comments on, where people were trying to figure out what exactly the person who posted this was talking about. So the picture is of a road, and there's trees. It's a road in the middle of the woods, and it says, "I tried to call you the day you committed suicide by driving your car into a tree. Hashtag IAM911. So that was one of my personal calls that I took. And this was actually, I believe, the week before I finished my dispatch career at Allegan County Central Dispatch. It's weird because it seemed like the, you know, gods of 911 or the dispatch gods were sending me every single thing possible before my career was over. As weird as that sounds, I got so many domestics, suicide calls, all kinds of shit that it was crazy. But it all hit in the last 2 weeks that I was in dispatch. And this one was the last week there. So the way this all came about was, I get a phone call, and it was around the time that, work was just getting out. So I was just getting in for the midnight shift, and I had relieved the supervisor, and I sat down, got situated, and a phone call comes in, and I pick it up right away. And there was a girl who was telling me about, this is kind of a friend of the family that was there. However, he was upset. And the way she was explaining everything, it sounded like just a, you know, a disorderly type thing, a disorderly comment. Complaint, I mean, sorry. I was looking at a comment at just a moment on the screen and I said comment, but a complaint. It was disorderly complaint, and that's how I was going to put it in. And, you know, I go through my line of questioning, as I always do, and I asked if he had had any weapons or anything like that, or if he wanted to harm himself, and the caller told me no, that everything, you know, he was just upset. He had gone in there and he was just pretty much pissed at the world. And she said he left just a few minutes ago. And I said, okay, well, is there anything else that you can tell me? We'll get an officer out there to talk to you. It might be a little bit, but we'll get somebody out there. And if he returns, make sure to call and we'll get somebody out there or we'll update the officers is what I was getting at. And she goes, well, she goes, there is one thing. She goes, he's been suicidal in the past. And I said, okay, well, that kind of changes the whole dynamic of this call. This is no longer in my head. And at this point now in my head, I'm thinking this is no longer a disorderly call. This is not a low priority complaint. This is now higher because if he's suicidal right now, then it's possible he's going to do something. So I asked her again and she goes, well, you know, he was kind of talking like he was when he was here. And I said, well, okay. And in my, you know, in my head, I'm thinking you didn't say anything about this before. So, I get his phone number from her and I got the vehicle description, which was a blue Toyota Tercel. And, I get off the phone with her. I go to pick up the phone to dial. And as I go to pick a phone to dial, another call comes in and I dial the guy's phone number first as this, you know, this line is coming in, but we've got four people on. So I figured somebody else would be able to get it. So I call him instead and the phone is ringing and nobody's answering. And my backup is unable to answer the phone because they're on a high priority complaint as well. So I hang up the phone to pick up the other one. And when I pick up the other one, there's a gentleman on the line saying, you need to get, police, fire, EMS, or just everybody out here. There was a real bad accident that just occurred. So I asked the location, you know, all the information that I usually ask. And I said, did you see what happened? And he said, yeah. He goes, this car just drove into on the side of the road into the ditch and just hauled straight into a tree and went directly into it and crashed. And I said, can you tell if that person is all right? Can you safely get out of your vehicle and see if that person is okay? And he goes, sir, I don't understand how that person would even survive what I just saw, to survive this crash. He goes, it's pretty bad. And I said, well, can you check? Can you yell out to that person? He goes, I'm walking up to it right now. And I said, what kind of car is it? Because I've got the location of where this car crashed. And I've also got the location of the previous call that I was on, and I'm looking at those places and they're not that far apart. So I'm wondering, is this my guy? Is this the guy I was trying to call? And the guy walks up and he says, it's a blue Toyota Tercel. And I remember that as he said it, I lipped it and my heart sank. And I said, is he okay? Can you tell? And he goes, he does not look like he made it. He's not moving. There's no way that he's alive. So I end up cupping the phone and I stand up and I yell over to, my coworker who's on main radios. And I said, you need to switch the officers from going to this address. They need to go to this location. I said, I'm pretty sure that this guy who just crashed into the tree is my guy. It's got to be him. And the officers get out there. Sure enough, it was him. There were officers that ended up going to the house either way to check the area just in case it was not him. But the gentleman that I was trying to reach out to, that I was trying to call, it was him after all. He had he had driven his car straight into a tree. And this is one that really got to me because I thought, so I had been talking for a couple of minutes with this girl on the line. You know, what if I would have asked something else? What if I would have done it this way? What if I would have got the number sooner and just hung up with her and called him? Would I have been able to get to him? You know, I kind of started to blame myself a little bit on this call because I thought there had to been something different I could have done to stop this. It was almost to the point where I took a while during that shift to look at the address, to see the possible routes he could have taken, how long it would have taken him to get from one place to the other, and the time that I got off the call to call him, if there was any scenario possible that I could have stopped this or saved this guy from doing this. But after everything that I did, I finally realized there's no way that I would have been able to get to him. He had already ran his car into the tree, really, from the time that I was taking this call, because I was only on that call for a couple minutes. And I got the phone number and hung up with her. And that phone call for the car crash was already coming in when I was trying to call him. So, but it took a while. It took a while for me in that shift to finally realize that because I couldn't let it go. I felt like I could have done something more. I could have done anything. And it's a horrible feeling. What's worse is that I still needed some sort of closure, even though I knew what had happened and what, and you know, just everything. I still needed some sort of closure, some sort of something to, I don't know, make me feel better. I don't know if I would say that to make me feel better, but to, I don't know, just closure in general is something that I needed. So one of my friends is that was there, was actually the medical examiner and had taken pictures and stuff, and I needed to see it. I needed to see what happened. So when they came back and they had the pictures, I looked at them. I looked at not of the person, but just of the crash of the car into the tree. And I can see it in my head now. But every time I see a blue Toyota Tercel go by, I think about that call and that person, what brought him to that point. You know, he was fully committed in killing himself. And I don't know, it just makes me wonder, but that's one of the calls that has stuck with me to this day. And that was almost 4 years ago. I'm sure even years and years from now, I'll still think about that. You know, again, that's where that story is. That's what happened with that one where I had put in, I tried to call you the day you committed suicide by driving your car into a tree. You know, it's like me reaching out to that guy saying, you know, it was me. I was the dispatcher. I am 911. I'm the person who tried to reach out to you the day that you committed suicide. You know, I tried to save you. I tried to help. You know, obviously it wasn't enough, but this person was fully committed and doing what he was doing. Hopefully that person has found their peace. Oh man, that was hard. This is kind of a downer, huh? But that's why I wanted to do this episode, was to share my stories. And that's what this podcast is all about, sharing dispatch stories and such. And I will do my best to try to end this podcast on a good note so that you're not left with a downer. But, you know, sometimes that's just not reality. So anyway, moving on, the next call, which this one is, all of these are hard calls. This next one, this third one that I want to talk about is, it's about my grandmother. And this meme, the image used for the meme is actually my real family. So the awesome lady on the left, my grandmother, Manuela, she, in this picture, it was rare that we had pictures of her smiling or laughing. She was the funniest person, but for whatever reason, in some of the pictures or in a lot of her pictures, we couldn't catch her smiling or laughing. it was always a treat. You know, when we were joking and laughing with her, but it was all in the moment, you know, so she would never pose. But this picture, I don't know if it was my mom who took the picture or who took it, but they caught her off guard. So she's looking off to the right and she's just busting up laughing. And my brother and my sisters are sitting with her, at my Uncle Emmett's house. So it's a great picture. I love it. But I wanted to make this snippet, this story, that much more real by using one of my own pictures for this story. So it says, "You're with me from the beginning, Grandma. 27 years later, I took the 911 call when you died. How fitting to be there for me in the beginning, and I was there for you in the end. I miss you, Grandma. Hashtag IM911. So that call, that was 2007. And my grandmother was pretty close to passing away as it was. She was in hospice care. So the night that it happened, we were expecting it to happen. It wasn't something that was out of nowhere. We were just waiting. And I was in dispatch, and it was the middle of the night, and we had already had it figured out that if my grandmother passed away while I was working, that I would get to go home and my supervisor would have somebody else come in, or depending on what time it was, they would just, you know, work it with two people. And so it's about 3 or 3:30 in the morning, and I had been texting back and forth with my mom and sisters the entire night, and excuse me, they were telling me, you know, just kind of giving me updates here and there of how she was. And, you know, one of the last text messages was that her breaths were becoming very, you know, few and far apart. And, that, you know, at any time she could go. And, I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking, you know, about my grandmother and, you know, just growing up, a lot of stuff that I had done while she was there, because you know, she lived with my family from, you know, before she lived with my parents before I was born. It was about a year or two before I was born. She was living with them, and she stayed with us for the rest of our lives. You know, she stayed with my mom that whole time, and you know, now she was getting towards the end. So, So I'm sitting there in dispatch, and my coworker, Alexis, ends up saying that she needs to get up to go to, the break room. She was going to get some, something to eat and something to drink. So I told her, go ahead. You know, there wasn't a lot going on. And, she got up and she goes into the break room. And as soon as the door shuts, the phone rings. And I'm the type of person when I was in dispatch where I would hit the speakerphone button right away and then pick up the handset, only so that I could pick up the phone a lot faster. And for whatever reason, this time it immediately felt different. The ringtones are all the same when the phone call comes in, but for some reason, this ringtone sounded different. I can't even explain it. I felt it the same way, or I've heard it the same way when a high priority call comes in. For whatever reason, I hear the ringtone different than what would be a non-emergency one. It's hard to explain. It sounds crazy, but maybe some of you out there have dealt with the same thing. So when this call came in, it felt different, and I was nervous, and I let one ring go, because if you pick up the phone right away, at least from the phone system that we had, if you pick it up right away, the phone number doesn't show up on the screen right away. So I let one ring go through, and then it popped up on the screen, and I noticed it was my mom's cell phone number, because you know, she's from Florida, and I had her phone number memorized, and I saw it, and I picked up the phone and just held on to it very tight, and I felt myself get hot right away, and I started sweating. And I put the phone up to my ear and said, Gallagher 911, where's your emergency? And my cousin Brenda's on the other line. And she says, Richie? And I said, yeah. And she says, Grandma passed away. And I mean, what do you do? I remember just, I froze for a couple seconds and snapped out of it and stayed professional and went through the motions. And then I hung up with them and I looked over at my supervisor and she goes, go. She goes, are you going to be okay? And I said, I think so. So I took off. I went to pick up my brother. And we went down to my aunt's house, which is about an hour or so away from where my house was. It was only about 20 or so minutes from work, but my brother was at my house, so I had to drive an hour away and then come back. On my way back, a couple of the deputies called me up and said, you know, we're here with your family. They're doing the best that they can given the situation. And they said, just be careful on your way over here. And, you know, try not to worry so much. And I told them that, you know, thanks. And that I was headed that way. And as I was headed that way, I kept thinking in my head, what are the odds? What were the odds that I would be the one to take the phone call? That my coworker would get up at that moment, that I would be the one left to take the phone calls, which is why I put in the, and my meme that, you know, my grandmother was there, you know, how fitting for her to be there for me from the beginning when I was born and for me to be there for her at the end when she passed away. And, for years I had been asking myself, what are the odds? Why was it meant for me to, you know, take the call and stuff? And a coworker of mine, now where I work at InDigital, I was telling him this story and he had said, what a blessing. And I had never thought about it before like that. So every now and then I still question it, but it was just meant to be, I guess. I definitely miss her. So the, oh man. So the last call, the fourth and final call that I want to talk about here is, this one was one of my first hard calls that I took in dispatch when I was working in Allegan. Remember when I first started out my career, I was in Florida at a small police department. And, there were some calls there that I had dealt with that, that were pretty big as well. But, in Allegan, that's where I got hit with a lot of them. And this was one of the first ones that I had taken when I was, done, with all of my training that, I was probably a year or so after I was done training, and it was definitely a hard one. It was that first that you get hit with, and you know, it deals with a child, and for whatever reason, those calls are the ones that really hit home with anybody. But the meme says, blue face, cold to the touch. I helped you with CPR after you found your infant face down, not breathing. It messed me up. I did everything I could, but it wasn't enough. And I did. This call was in the evening, and it was a mom who had, I don't remember how many kids now. It was maybe three kids, I think, is what she had. And there were two older ones and then an infant. And she worked midnights. And her mother, which would be the grandmother of these kids, of course, was there to watch them while mom slept because, well, she needed to sleep before going in for her shift. And what happened with this one was that I get this call and the call comes in and, of course everyone is screaming hysterical. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I get all the preliminary information. We've got officers headed out there and it turns out that, the infant was found in the bedroom where mom was sleeping on top of a basket that was full of towels and face down. The baby was blue in the face. What had happened was that the baby had fallen asleep. So the baby was put in the bed with mom. Mom woke up and went out into the living room and asked, you know, where's the baby? And she was told, well, the baby was next to you on the bed. So she runs into the room, turns the lights on and doesn't see the baby anywhere. And she looks on the side of the bed and finds the baby face down on a basket of towels. The baby had somehow rolled off, but the baby wasn't strong enough in the neck to be able to lift its head. And I only know this because they had officers and detectives out there actually for a long time. And after I had taken this call, because I asked mom if she wanted to do CPR, and at first she had said no, that there was no way, she was gone. But then she said yes. So I had her doing CPR and they were going and going and going. And of course, in a situation like this, even though it's only a few minutes on a call, it feels like forever for not only the caller, but dispatch as well. And it was killing me inside. And I was just hoping and hoping that it would work, that it wasn't too late. But sure enough, when the officers got out there and, you know, EMS, they confirmed that it was code K or death. And I died a little inside. You know, I sat there just staring at my screens and the phones are going off and I was on backup phone. So I had a chance to actually sit there for a moment, but I'm listening to the phones ringing and ringing, even though everybody else is getting them and it's fine. But my supervisor looks over at me and she goes, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I don't know." I said, that was horrible. And, you know, my son at the time, my second boy, he wasn't that old. I mean, he was a couple years old, but still, you know, I'm there comparing in my head, you know, what would I do? What if I was in that person's position, you know, and especially on the phone too, I put myself in those shoes. And, when you're on the phone in dispatch, you put yourself in those shoes, but you do it in the back of your head. You know, sometimes the emotions leak out, but the majority of the time you're strong and professional, which kind of sucks too sometimes, because then when those calls get played on the radio, or not so much the radio, but, you know, TV or online or whichever, people wonder why, or say the dispatchers are cold and they are like drones. Well, there's a reason that we sound like that. It's because we have to sound like that, because we have to keep that person calm. We have to keep, you know, ourselves calm inside, but in the back of our heads, we're dying with you. We're hurting with you, but we have to do everything that we can so that you don't hear it, so that we can make it through, because someone has got to be in charge and that's what we do. So it took a little bit for me to really accept what had happened. I mean, it was just crazy that something like that could happen, and especially because I didn't know the whole story to begin with. So that's why I say it was hard for me to accept it, because I didn't know what had happened and I needed that closure. So my supervisor, her husband was one of the sergeants that was working at the time, and he was out there, and he came up into dispatch and he sat next to me and he asked if I was okay. And I said, "Not really." I said, "But I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. He goes, well, maybe you should take a break. And I said, no. I said, I can't. I said, I have to keep working. I said, this is all I need. And this is what will help me feel better. I said, I need closure. I need to know exactly what happened. Why did that happen? Why were there detectives out there? Did this person do it to that kid or what happened? And he said, no. He goes, there was no wrongdoing. And the story that I told you just a moment ago is exactly what he told me. And it was just an accident, just some crazy bullshit that happened that sucks. And that's what it took for me to feel better. I needed that closure. I needed to know exactly what happened. And after that, you know, I felt better. And I went on, continued taking my calls, and went through the rest of the shift. But it's those calls, you know, that stick with you. And I think that's what this movement has brought out, is all of these calls stick with us, and that PTSD is very real in public safety and in dispatch. And I've never been diagnosed or anything, but maybe you listening to me talking about this is proof, or just that it really does affect me. But again, that's what this whole thing was about, is telling these stories and to show the difference between dispatchers and clerical workers, and to show that we do way more than what people think. You know, we're handling lives. We're doing triage on calls. You know, I've given examples since all this started for articles and you know, other podcasts and such, saying that there's so much shit that happens that you can't even imagine. The scenario that I have given is taking a medical where someone has chest pain, and you know, when you have a medical like that, someone has chest pain, difficulty breathing, it's a priority one, EMS is headed out there. But if there are no other symptoms, and if the caller is okay with it, if there are other calls coming in, you put them on hold. Now, in this scenario that I gave, I put them on hold because this person seems to be okay. You know, they've got chest pain and difficulty breathing, but no other signs of stroke. You know, they're able to say the early bird catches the worm without slurring. You know, they're not in and out of consciousness or anything like that. So even though it's a priority one, you're able to put them on hold for at least a moment to get the next call. So the next call is a bad accident, a car that's flipped into the ditch. You've got another EMS unit headed out there, and you've got police, and you've got all these calls that are coming in because everyone has a cell phone. So everyone is calling on the same exact call. And you're going through all of those. Now, the car is flipped over. People are headed out there. However, there's no like extrication that needs to be done. You know, there's no one that's pinned in. So during those calls, you get another call. And you're thinking that this is going to be another call for somebody that's on the highway seeing this car flipped, and they're calling it in just in case. But it turns out that it's a domestic. And now it's a domestic where one of the parties has a weapon. You've got three different calls going on now, and you have to triage. Well, you stick with the call that you're on that has the person with the weapon. Now, what if the weapon gets put away? They end up being calm. They're separated. One is inside with the door locked, and the other one is outside in their car just waiting. So what do you do then? And this is something that I've asked people before, because you've got these three calls. Well, there's already help going out to the crash. So you're okay there. But you go and you check on the person who you were helping out with for the medical, because officers are just getting ready to pull up onto this domestic. And you go to the next call. But it turns out that while that person was on hold, even for just a couple of minutes, they're now passed out. And the other person who's there with them needs help with CPR instructions. So this is something that I've told people. There are many decisions that we're making all in a split second's notice. Because the person who asked me about this, who was writing an article, he said, you don't actually make life and death decisions on the phone, right? You don't do it the way police, fire, EMS would make a decision right at that moment. And I said, hell yes, we do. And I gave that scenario, and he was completely blown away that is something that we do. And it's amazing, you know, how the public doesn't know, but this movement has really built on to what we do and has pushed it out there and opened eyes, like I've said before. And people now know that there is way, way more that dispatch does than anyone would think. And I just want to thank all of you for coming on this journey with me and for assisting me in sharing all of your stories. My team and I are going to continue to tell your stories. And going into the wrap-up of this, this is what I want to say, that, again, thank you. If you want to submit an I Am 911 story, you can submit it to the Facebook fan page and for the podcast. You can submit it in to the inbox. You can do it as a meme, or you can give us the text. As long as it's a shorter story, we can do the meme for you. If it's a longer story, we will end up posting it to the main page as a note, which is good as well because there are all kinds of notes on that page. The final decision still hasn't come down yet. There are a lot of people that are backing this, this push, a lot of industry partners. There are many that are out there pushing this right now. April of 2017 is when they will announce their final decision, and hopefully it'll be to reclassify. If not, we will continue fighting, we'll continue sharing stories, and we will have to start fighting at a state level. I know the state of Indiana is looking at that right now, playing with the idea of fighting at a state level. I believe Utah has already done that at the state level and has passed it. The state of Idaho, the state of Idaho is also trying to fight for that same thing as well. So there's a lot of fight left and a lot of stories to be shared. Again, my team and I are doing our best to put out as many stories as we can at once, but there are new stories daily that are getting posted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So make sure to look for those. I want to thank our sponsors, of course, audible.com, and for your free audiobook download and 30-day free trial, you can go to audibletrial.com/trenches. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trenches. And this episode, along with all the others, are sponsored by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And also make sure to check out the IAED, the International Academy's Emergency Dispatch. Check them out online, Twitter, Facebook, and like them, follow them. They have a lot of awesome things that they do for dispatch as well. And we have partnered up with them to share our interests, our links, our posts. And they will be featuring the podcast at the 2017 Navigator Conference in New Orleans, Louisiana. And I am also sponsoring a scholarship. And this is the Within the Trenches Continuing Education scholarship that was put out for registration on December 2nd, which is last week, Friday. And you can go to thejabberlog.com/scholarship/scholarship.php. And in episode 124, I will actually show you what you have to do in a video as well as audio episode. So make sure to look out for that. A lot of big things coming. Also throwing around the idea of doing a Project I Am 911 meetup. And this meetup would be where, you know, dispatchers can come to the meetup, share their stories. There would be food, drinks, and such. We would share stories. We would do a live podcast and maybe even have some speakers to talk about stress management, CISM, which is critical incident stress management, and a bunch of other stuff. So there are big things coming, and yeah, stay tuned, look out for it, because it's going to be a good time. So for those who are listening, if you want to be a guest on the show, or you have any comments or questions, you can email the show. That'll be wttpodcast@gmail.com. you can follow us on Twitter, that is @911podcast. You can like us on Facebook, that is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And this episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.